Architecture Talks, the podcast about architecture from Jung.
We have our hotel clients coming to us saying they want a residential feel. We have our residential clients saying they want their development to feel a bit like a boutique hotel.
For the most of us, Conran is a familiar name. Known as Sir Terence Conran, who established the studio over 50 years ago. They slowly built up a global reputation for intuitive, insightful, and timeless work in architecture, interiors, master planning, as well as product design. The office sees itself as problem solvers who are completely immersed in design, with a clear ambition to improve the way people live their lives. This results in buildings and spaces with their own sense of location, identity, and character. Through their form, details, and materiality, they manifest distinctive personalities with charm and relevance. In today's podcast, Tina Norden gives us Katrina Patrice Varga and
Diana Slavich insights into the new normal of everyday office life, her projects, and inspirations. Tina Norden, partner at Conran & Partners, is an interior designer and architect with a diverse portfolio stretching across many contexts and continents, from hotel and restaurant design to high-end residential. Tina collaboratively leads design teams in both the UK and Hong Kong and is currently working on exciting projects in Europe and Asia. Hello and welcome to the Jung Architecture Talks podcast. It's great to have you with us today, Tina.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm very much looking forward to our conversation and to the many things that we can talk about today.
Tina, as a partner at Conran's Hong Kong office, you probably commute between London and Hong Kong. Where are you physically at this moment?
Right now in our brand new studio in London, which opened in June. Sadly, due to the current travel restrictions based on coronavirus, Hong Kong has very, very strict quarantine requirements, which basically means that currently it's not really very feasible to go over there and see the team in person.
What have the last 2 years been for you, like without the face-to-face meetings, no site visits? So how did you manage yourselves?
I think really it's been a 180-degree turnaround in the way we work and the way that I've always said design kind of really should work, which is face-to-face, both with the team, with clients, meeting each other, going to sites. You know, and really having that kind of personal time with both our clients and with our design team. We didn't have a choice. Obviously, we were all thrown into a situation that we all weren't familiar with and we had to adapt. And we did manage. I wouldn't say that this is something that is ideal and that we would have done if we wouldn't have had the choice. But it has actually worked incredibly well working purely online, digitally via VCs. We work in teams in our studio. But, you know, whichever platform it is that you're using to actually have design meetings, to meet clients, to develop projects and to actually see projects all the way through purely digitally without actually meeting in person. It is possible. Would we want to do that in the future? Definitely not. But it has certainly changed the way we see the amount of travel that we do and whether we really need to meet for every single meeting or whether it's possible to actually do some of that online and save some of the travel and the time, et cetera, that comes with that. So it's been very interesting. And I think we've learned a lot from this. I was always the first person to say, you have to meet in person. You have to kind of be with the team in order to work. But we have now as a studio implemented a flexible working policy, which means that people have the option of working from home for a couple of days a week. Because we recognize that actually it can be an advantage. Some people really enjoy it. Some people find it very beneficial. Obviously, not to forget people who have children or have other kind of, you know, commitments outside of work. And obviously, for some people, it is a really very positive thing. Other people hate it. So, you know, we want to give people that flexibility and they can choose which way they want to do it in the future.
Building for people in different cultural circles means a high sensitivity to ways of life and symbols. At the same time, you should be open to new things. A list of habits distinguishes Europe from Asia. I know that quite well as I have a lot of contact to Asia as well. I have to admit, I miss to travel there.
Me too.
As we just talked about it. Is there a globalization of taste or how do you consider the importance of local traditions and stories in your projects?
The short answer is yes and no. And to elaborate on that, you know, I think there is certainly a globalization of taste in the sense that, you know, we're all online. we all see what's happening. We're all kind of following, you know, new designs. We're all following, you know, what's happening around the world. And certainly we travel a lot. Everybody travels a lot. So we see what's happening all around the globe. And there's certain kind of trends and materiality and ways of approaching design, ways of approaching spaces that have started to become much more universally and globally accepted. However, as you rightly said, there are very particular kind of cultural and sometimes religious or, you know, whatever it might be, differences within countries. Sometimes they're very, very subtle. It's just how, you know, maybe a meeting runs and how people react to you in a meeting. And it's very, very important to be informed, be very aware of that, be very mindful that maybe the way we see things is not the way everybody else also sees them. And that is not only for the design, ultimately. A good example is, for example, in Japan, you would always have a place where you can take your shoes off before you actually enter a residence. It's small things like that. And that's not something that we would necessarily have in Europe. So it's small things like that that, you know, I think we need to be very mindful of in order to make sure that our projects will be liked and will be kind of appreciated and enjoyed by our customers all across the globe. But also, of course, you know, in terms of dealing with our clients and making sure that we actually have a good understanding, that we can communicate with each other, that we, you know, that we're respectful of each other, and that we understand how they communicate to us, you know, what their viewpoints are. Again, taking the example of Japan, because that was one of the first countries I've kind of worked in and made those experiences. You know, it's not very common, and the same actually applies to China, for example, to say in your face if they're not in agreement with your viewpoint, because that's all about having respect for each other and face, etc. So this might be something that only comes out later, or comes out through conversation or in slightly different ways. And it's just being very mindful of that, that, you know, things are not always the way they seem to us with a European eye, but there's many different ways of doing things across the globe. And we just need to be aware of that.
Absolutely. Would you say from your experience, are the clients in Asia more open-minded or more experimental than the Europeans, for example?
It's a very interesting question. And I think somewhat you can say yes. I've been judging a number of awards over the last years. And you know, when you look at the design output that comes out of Asian countries, it is hugely exciting. It's very forward thinking. It's experimental. There's a lot of kind of, you know, different ideas that are coming in. It's very kind of broad in its approach. So it's always a joy to kind of look at that. And obviously, you know, working in that context, that's a great challenge for us as well to live up to that kind of high level of creativity. But that is not to say that we don't see that in Europe. I think it's a different way of approaching things. I think in Europe, at times, there's more consideration going into usage, for example, how things have been done in the past, et cetera, et cetera. There are also, of course, you know, for example, Germany is a good example where the education, for example, for architects is much more based also on engineering and making sure that you actually have solutions of how you build something, which obviously you will design very differently with that in the back of your mind. So I think it's different approaches, but I think we see very creative schemes in Europe. But I think at the moment, probably there is a little bit of an edge in Asia, and I think there's some very, very exciting work coming out of that part of the world.
Tina, in your experience, is the mutual understanding equal? So would you say the Asians understand the European way of thinking more than the other way around? Or is it more the Europeans understanding the Asian part?
You know, without kind of wanting to get myself into hot water, I would almost say that maybe in Asia, there's more willing and there's more depth of understanding of Europe than the other way around. And whether that is a cultural thing, that it's, you know, being respectful to each other and really kind of, you know, immersing yourself in the person that you're dealing with, which is very, very deeply ingrained in Asia.
Yeah, especially the respecting isn't the Asian understanding is completely different than a European would actually understand the word respect.
Absolutely. Very, very much so. Whereas, you know, maybe at times it's very easy to go back to shorthands of how we think a certain country or certain people is and just kind of broad brushstroke applying that when there's so much more refinement, so much more detail to that. Particularly when you're thinking about Asia and the number of countries and even a country like China, you know, that is so vast and has so many different people and so many different kind of approaches, et cetera, just within the one country.
And so talking about today or now, the pandemic is forcing the hotel industry to react. And I mean, we're sure the requirements of your clients have changed in the last few months. What are you thinking about currently?
Obviously, top of the discussion with every project that we're starting now. And the discussion is certainly very different, whether it's a project that's already in progress or a project that is only really starting now. Projects that are in progress will obviously complete sooner. So there is more thought being given to what happens when we actually open. If we open this year, if we open next year, there will probably be quite a strong influence still in terms of how people approach space and how they use spaces. So, for example, spacing furniture further apart and things like that are much more prevalent and very much part of the discussion as to how things will be set up when we first open. When we talk about projects that are further down the pipeline, because obviously if you're starting an hotel project now, we're talking 2, 3, 4, sometimes even longer until the hotel will actually open. The discussion then goes much more towards what we think might still be the case at that point, which nobody knows, of course. So it's then kind of talking about flexibility. It's talking about the social distancing is obviously one of the kind of key elements, really, because a lot of the other parts that come into it are to do with operational elements like cleanliness, obviously the materials that we use in terms of, you know, how they can be maintained and all of those kind of things. But a lot of it obviously comes down to social distancing and elements like that. And that's very much down to different operators taking slightly different views on that, different developers taking slightly different views on that. But there's certainly always a discussion over flexibility in the spaces so you can kind of get things tighter again in the future, hopefully, or keeping it kind of further apart. It's a moving feat and something that we're kind of continuously talking about. And I guess, you know, as a project comes closer to completion, it's then settled what we do when we first open and how that might then be adapted in the future. But yeah, I mean, I don't think any of us really know what will happen with that going forward, because a lot of that is obviously innate in how people react personally to something. And that's very difficult to predict.
But can you tell some trends that are coming up, in your opinion?
There's a lot of talk about the pandemic accelerating trends that maybe have been happening in the industry for some time. The key one, of course, has to do with the kind of technological aspects of particularly hotels. You know, anything from how the room is controlled, how you check in, how you access your door, you know, what you need to touch, what you don't need to touch, how you communicate with the staff. All of that had been kind of bubbling away, but has probably been massively accelerated and kind of moved forward a number of years just over the last couple of years. So we see a lot of that.
Yeah, and it seems like the whole guest journey is being rethinked, right?
Yes, exactly. And again, what's interesting with that is that, you know, there are people who absolutely cherish that. You know, they're very happy that they can come into the hotel, they can check in on their phone or online, they can arrive, they can use their phone to enter their room. They don't really need to engage with anyone. But there are also a lot of people, and I'm one of them, who actually really enjoy the interaction with the staff. And I guess in many ways, staying in a hotel, part of that is the service. Otherwise, you can, you know, stay in an Airbnb or you can, you know, rent an apartment or whatever it might be. You know, that kind of hello at the door, you know, someone telling you about the city, someone telling you what to do and someone you can ask is something that we really like. So I think it's the question of degrees. I think there are certain things that we all want to be able to do. And there's other things that, you know, are very personal and some people will enjoy the engagement, other people really don't.
I remember a stay in a hotel in Singapore 2.5 years ago, which was meant to be used like totally digital. So no contact to staff or anything. And I absolutely agree with you. I was one of the people who enjoyed to go to the hotel desk and check in personally and then talk to the people and have just a very personal contact. But I think there are many people who definitely also would prefer to have just the app and feel everything on their own.
Well, it also depends on what time you check in. You know, if you check in the middle of the night after a 12-hour flight, maybe you don't want to talk to someone in that moment. But when you get up in the morning to breakfast, maybe you do enjoy, you know, being welcomed by someone.
Absolutely.
Saying hi to someone or interact with someone local. So basically, it's a human need.
That's exactly right. And I mean, materiality is another very big one. You know, we were kind of jokingly talking about the death of the cushion, you know, whether that really happens, who knows. But, you know, joking aside, it's really just talking about, you know, people feeling like what is in their room, what's in the public areas can be cleaned and feel safe. And obviously, again, this is a question of degrees with different people and different perceptions. But that is certainly a conversation that we're having just in terms of, you know, how can things be maintained and cleaned and kept kind of very hygienic. And that's certainly another big discussion, obviously, for us as specifiers, selecting materials and selecting particularly also fabrics and things like that.
We found an interview where you sat with the boundaries to the way people live becoming more and more blurred. We're starting to explore sectors we haven't worked in for some time. So a new symbiosis of hotel business and living is obviously being created. Tell us a little more about your strategy or your approach.
we've always kind of been very much multidisciplinary in every sense of the word. So we are architects and interior designers. We also work on master planning. We work on styling. So we're kind of very much across all scales and across all kind of project types as well, and have always been in our past. Obviously, we are most known for residential and hospitality, but we've always done a number of kind of workplace projects, both in architecture and interiors, retail. What we are very much finding is that all of those sectors are starting to cross over massively. So hotels and residential, that's been like that for some time, that we have our hotel clients coming to us saying they want a residential feel. We have our residential clients saying they want their development to feel a bit like a boutique hotel. So that has been going on for some time, and we can certainly use our kind of cross-sector experience to work on both of those and kind of make that stronger. But we're also finding that, for example, workplace, co-working, you know, we're about to take part in HICS here in London, which is a big trade show, where the theme is a little bit working from hotel, because that's obviously been something that a number of people have been doing. So we've also been working on a new brand identity for Crowne Plaza some years back, which was all about making the hotel more useful for the modern business traveler. So this is all about working in the hotel. Where can you work in a hotel and how do you do that? And obviously that then comes into workplace projects that we're doing. We tend to do workplace projects that are maybe more on the kind of boutique and lifestyle end, if you like. So maybe smaller in scale, more kind of personally designed. But there the same conversations come up in terms of, you know, creating space, creating something that has an identity, something that people kind of feel comfortable in, both working, having lunch, or, you know, meeting people or whatever it might be. So there's so many crossovers between all of those that we really feel that, you know, the fact that we do work in all of those sectors gives us strength kind of on all sides, because you can draw from so many different elements for each project.
There's another expression we would like to throw in our podcast. It's built to rent. It's a standard in Asia for a long time, but for the UK, where people own housing, it's a quite disruptive element, isn't it?
It's huge here, actually, really. As you both know, I'm German originally, so I grew up in Hamburg. And obviously in Germany, renting an apartment and renting an apartment all your life is perfectly normal. And many, many people do that. And moving to the UK, it's been very, very different. It's all about home ownership. It's all about purchasing a flat, purchasing a house. And that's really the ultimate goal for people. And it's always been the case that renting was seen as slightly inferior to that. And that is really changing now. And obviously, pandemic may have an impact on that. Cost has a massive impact on that, because obviously part of the reason why in Asia it's been more and more popular also is because the housing prices are just unaffordable for young people, and particularly young people, but also I'm saying young people, but you know, people with normal incomes, it's become very unaffordable to live in big cities. There is a shift that needs to happen just based on affordability. But I think it's also in people's minds that that shift is starting to happen here, that people are actually thinking about, you know, do I need to own my apartment? You know, do I want a lighter footprint? You know, do I maybe have a house somewhere else and I come into the city in order to work or whatever it might be? So these BTR schemes, which are very much kind of at the top of everybody's mind here in the UK right now, are very much aiming for that. And the interesting thing with them is that it's not just apartments, but it's actually apartments with usually quite significant public areas attached to it. So really, you're starting to talk about something that's almost a bit like a hotel, but you do have a proper little apartment. And I'm saying little because in most cases, they are quite kind of compact apartments that obviously have a kitchen, have a bathroom, et cetera, in it, but that are quite kind of small in terms of the footprint. So the idea is basically that you utilize the public areas as an extension of your home. And that is attractive on a number of points, because obviously it's more affordable to rent a small apartment, but you do have all of the facilities that a clubhouse can offer you. The social aspect, not to forget, I think a lot of people have suffered from loneliness and not being able to see people and really kind of wanting that kind of connection with people and that kind of social interaction. And obviously those kind of clubhouses do foster that very much and invite that and want people to come in and enjoy that. So it is on all levels kind of tapping into a number of kind of themes and a number of different aspects of life that people are very aware of and that are impacting on people's life. And as a result of that, it's becoming more and more popular. There's a number of companies, like, for example, we're working with Argent Related. Related is a big American company that have come into the UK market with that experience from the American market and kind of sharing that over here and bringing that into the housing market in the UK. So it's something that we're learning here and that is becoming stronger and stronger. And I do think it is part of the future, whether in that format with lots of clubhouse spaces or not or whatever, or whether just it being much more accepted, much more normalized to just rent and to keep renting and then not being that strong pressure of actually purchasing.
there are many, many interesting concepts, like living concepts, coming up all over Europe. And it's really interesting to see how it works then, because in the design process, it looks amazing and it looks so interesting, but it has to be proved then while the people are living in there and just show if it works correctly. You just mentioned it already before. Let's move to another continent, to the US. You're a huge fan, you told us, of mid-century modern architecture, particularly on the US West Coast. So architects like Richard Neutra, William F. Cody, Albert Frey really inspire you.
Yes.
Why do they?
I think it's a mixture of things. Sunshine comes into it for someone who has lived in London for a long time. But quite aside from that, I think it was a period in architecture that was very innovative, was very forward-thinking, but in many ways also quite free. And what I mean with that is that really, I think we are today so much more aware of many restrictions to design, you know, whether it's to do with insulation, whether it's got to do with, you know, cost and buildability and those kind of things. It was a period where there was huge amounts of experimentation and huge amounts of thinking of how people want to live and how people want to live in the future, and how to kind of suit a new lifestyle that was coming in that period of time after the war, you know, people becoming much more liberated, people becoming much more kind of free in the way they behaved and lived. And I think it has a certain kind of joy to it and an openness to it. And I think that's reflected in the architecture that feels at equal times quite modest looking at it with today's eyes, but also very heroic and very kind of passionate and very exciting. Lots of kind of new things. And you look at a lot of those houses and they still look very, very contemporary today. You know, you look at photographs taken at the time and you see people in kind of 1950s dresses and you go, oh my God, you know, this is almost not really matching each other. I mean, the same happens when you look at Corbusier and his work and you see photographs with 1920s cars under his house that looks like something straight out of the future. So I think it's a really exciting period in architecture and design where so much was happening that is still very valid and still kind of contemporary looking today.
I would like to get back to the point of this loneliness you were talking about, that the pandemic maybe started living in people. So isn't it a bit contrary to the concept of hotels that is coming up, you know, that it's like emphasizing the loneliness we don't really want?
I think the pandemic experience has been so different for different people. You know, people who live alone, people who live with their partners, people who have children, you know, live with parents or whatever it might be. So I think it's very hard to have a kind of united experience, because for some people it's like, I really need to be alone now. And for other people it's like, I really need people now. So it's been very kind of across the board really in terms of that experience. But I think everybody I've been talking to certainly felt like they were really missing the social contacts with people outside of your own home, whether you've been by yourself or not or whatever it might be. And I don't think that will change over the future. I think when we talk about some of those kind of design elements in hotels, it probably has more to do with choice again, that you can choose to be in your room, connect with the staff via the internet or via kind of digital means, order into your room or whatever, that you want and can have the experience of actually going and sharing a meal with people, or, you know, sitting in the lobby areas or using the public areas. And we've certainly not seen public areas becoming smaller in hotels, quite the opposite. They tend to become more expensive and
more common space.
More common, absolutely. There's a hotel that just opened here in London called The Londoner, which actually has a whole kind of floor dedicated just to people staying in the hotel, which I think is a really lovely touch, because it means that there is somewhere where you can go if you don't want to be in your room, and you can be there with people, you can engage with them or you cannot, but you can be in a more communal environment. And I do think that that is very much still part of the future. And obviously, if you don't choose to be part of that, you don't have to. But I do think that it's going to be strong for the years to come as well.
Yeah. And part of the new concept is also integrating the locals a lot more than the hospitality did so far.
Absolutely. I think that's really fundamental. And that's been going on for some years, really. The realization that particularly if you have a hotel that has public areas, be that spas, restaurants, whatever it might be, in order for the bottom line to really work, you do need to have people from the community also coming in and utilizing those spaces, or it's just not worthwhile. Resorts are very different. You know, they're much more kind of inward looking. But when you're talking about hotels, particularly hotels that are in urban context, but quite aside from the financial aspect of it, it's also about creating something that is desirable, something that people gravitate to. You know, you want to stay in a hotel because there's a little bit of a scene going on. You know, there's interesting people there. There might be a DJ night. There might be events going on. You know, the restaurants are buzzing. That's what people are looking for, isn't it? Everywhere. And if you can create that in the hotel, then that will also attract people staying over in the rooms.
We would like to get to a more personal question because we've talked about projects and a lot of business topics. So if we may, we would like to ask you, if you had a year off, what would your personal project look like, Tina?
Well, there's two options there, really. One would be to travel, because not only do I love travel, but I've not been doing it for a long time and I've been missing it. And there's so many places in the world that I would still like to see. And obviously, if you have a year, you can also choose different ways of traveling, maybe traveling overground and not just flying everywhere. So that would be top of my list. The other thing I would love to do is to just live in another country or number of countries for a significant amount of time, because we go on holiday and you kind of tap into different countries, you tap into different cultures, but you don't actually get a deeper understanding of it. And obviously, having worked in Hong Kong now for some time and spending more significant amounts of time in one place, you really start kind of getting under the skin of somewhere. You really start to understand, you know, how people live, you know, what makes a place tick. So having the opportunity to maybe spend a few months living somewhere, maybe Palm Springs, you know, maybe Los Angeles, who knows?
The sun, away from the rain.
Somewhere with sun, that's top of this. But you know, spending some time somewhere that you can actually really kind of get into the country and getting into the place, that would be super exciting.
Even though you said that there are many places you haven't seen yet, would you have an inside tip for like an extraordinary place where we should plan a stay?
Well, the list is as long as my arm, and I have a tally of hotels I would like to stay in that is like running over numerous pages, probably takes more than a lifetime. There's a few things that people always talk about. One of them is to see the Arctic, see the icebergs. A friend of mine has taken that incredible trip down to the South Pole, which I'm not that seafaring. So the rough seas put me off of that a little, but that sounds absolutely incredible because it almost sounds like a completely different world. I would also like to see more of Latin America because I think it's a very, very exciting part of the world. But there's a lot going on, both kind of politically, socially, culturally, food-wise. You know, it's been one of the kind of hot locations. So that's definitely on the top of my list. And I've not really seen much of Africa outside of Northern Africa. So that's another part of the world that merits a lot of exploring that I haven't been able to do.
If you need some tips for Latin America, give me a call. I studied in Argentina.
Oh, yes.
I've got some hot places to tell you to go there.
I'm sure. It's such an exciting place.
Fantastic. So we already reached the end of our podcast. It was fantastic to listen to you. And we're really looking forward to what's coming up next and hoping that we will be able to meet soon somewhere in this world. I think Asia is not like the worst place to meet.
Absolutely not. No.
And well, we would also like to thank our listeners. And we are looking very forward to share our next Jung Architecture podcast with you. Tune in on jung.de/architects.